Welcome back, everyone. WIBG 398-1020, the Welcome Home Show. We are very honored today to have Bill have some really, I don't want to use the word heavy hitters, but very, very valuable Vietnam veterans to our country. Of course, Ralph Galati's in the studio with us. He's a partner on our show. And Ralph's a 14-month Inouye Hilton prisoner of war. And we were surprised, Ralph. Usually you do the show over the phone.
I missed you.
You missed me.
I'm here for Valentine's Day.
And we have Joe Daly. I met Joe, I guess, 10 or 12 years ago when the Vietnam Veteran Delaware County Veteran Memorial was built out in Newtown Square with, I think, the greatest board that was ever assembled. Guy Fasano, great Linda Holden, Dennis Murphy, you, Nicole, a bunch of other people I'm probably going to forget in the yes. But before we bring up Congress and Norcalf, I do want to say one thing about Joe Daly. Joe Daly's a guy I talk about all the time that really needs to see a psychiatrist. Now, I'll tell you why. Joe Daly, and correct me, Joe, if I'm wrong, a Marine Vietnam veteran. You were home a short time. Your mom's making breakfast. Your dad, your brother yells upstairs, Joe, breakfast is ready. You come down with your fatigue. And your brother said, Joe, I thought you were done with the Marines. His mom said, no, my son, he's going back. You went back again, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
For how long?
Another 6 months.
And then you come home and you become a policeman.
Yes.
How many years? 10, 12?
54
years. Now, here's the part about a psychiatrist. A veteran, he comes home to become a fireman, a policeman, an EMT, to run up a dark alley where somebody has a gun that he doesn't know, or run into a burning building like Bill did being a fireman and a Marine Vietnam veteran, or an EMT carrying a person down 9 flights of steps to save their lives. Joe, you did all this for people you didn't even know.
I believe in service. I believe in service above self, and there's no more satisfaction in life than helping others.
And we're going to get more into you and Ralph and everyone, but Congressman Norcalf, are you with us?
I certainly am. How are you, Joe?
I'm doing fine, sir. Do you remember the last time we saw one another?
It was probably back in 19, maybe, at the battleship.
Yep, remember?
We
did a show on the ship, and I went to get something out of my car. Bill, was that the day you banged your head on the boat? We thought we had to put Bill in the hospital that day. But I went down to get something out of my car, and they let me park near the boat, near the ship. And who comes out of his car but Congressman Norcalf? He said, Joe, I was just at the dentist. I chipped a tooth, and I told the guy, you got to get done so I get on the radio show. And you've always been very, very kind and very generous to us, sir. And I want to say that publicly.
Well, thank you, Joe, and for what you continue to do, and certainly that Ralph and Joe there who have done so much for our country, to all three of you, thank you.
And I was with a friend of yours last Thursday night, a friend of Ralph's too, Trudy Corma. And Trudy, dear, dear friend of yours, you got a post office name for her son, Salvatore, that I believe in April 2010 he lost his life in Afghanistan. And
he did. And Trudy continues to serve. She served on my committee that selects individuals to apply for the service academy,
yes,
which is remarkable given that her son was a West Point graduate and knows it uniquely from her eyes to watch somebody go in. And now she continues to give back. She's a special woman.
Yeah, and I know you're very involved. I'll tell you, the last time I saw you, you probably didn't see me because you were up on stage and I was in the crowd, was at the commissioning of the USS New Jersey submarine last September 10th.
That was a wonderful day, an incredible, or as it's described, the most complicated machine in world history.
Well, I can kind of believe it because I had the honor of going out on it for when they took it on Monday to Norfolk. I was invited to go on the ship, and we left sometime late Monday night, and we landed in Norfolk on Friday evening, and we spent 2 days under the water and 2 days above the water.
Wow. That's an incredible opportunity for you to see firsthand what our mariners who go under the sea have to experience for months at a time.
28 young women are on that boat. 128 people together, 28. And I got to tell you, Congressman, I'm sitting here with a table full of Vietnam veterans. I never saw anybody work harder at their job in the military than the people on a submarine. They get one tail a week. They get every third day, then every fourth day they get a change of overalls. They run out of deodorant. They run out of toothpaste because they have nowhere to store it.
Yeah. And they hot bunk it for most of the people who live on that. They have to share their bunks.
You know, they share their... Well, I didn't see anybody sharing. I know, Bill, the battleship in New Jersey, they shared their hammocks. They didn't even have a
bed. Oh, my God, yes. Yeah.
And you were there, I think you were there that night when they invited the whole submarine, USS New York, the whole crew, down to a dinner on the battleship in New Jersey. And you're one of the main reasons that battleship in New Jersey is still kind of active today, even though it's not shooting them big guns, but it's showing them to a lot of sightseers. How important is that boat to Camden?
Well, it's not just Camden. Let's be absolutely clear. It's part of who we are in this country. I was just thinking, Pat James and I, back in 1999, we were the long shot down here. It was called the Home Port Alliance, going up against Joe Azzolina at the time, who wanted it to go up to Bayonne. And we put together a hell of an application, and certainly we called it the home port. It first landed in the water right across the river from Camden at the Philadelphia Shipyard. And with a little hard work, a diverse group of individuals, the Navy awarded us the battleship New Jersey. It was wonderful.
You know, Congressman, I sit on the board for Stand Up and Salute Horizon Blue Cross Blue Shield for the Medicare program for veterans to be able to get up Monday morning. If they don't feel good, go to any doctor, kind of like your program. And yeah. And I think we seriously have to get together on your Veterans Freedom of Health Act. But I was going to bring it, and I said, nah. It'll take up too much time, but I have an appointment the week after next with Dr. Morrow on Route 9, 3 minutes from my home. And they sent me 6 pages explaining how I was approved. I'm 100% disabled. And I'm reading it, and I'm thinking about you, talking about we got to make it easier. 5.5 pages were telling me what I'm not allowed to do. If I miss my appointment, I can't go to another appointment until I start the process all over again. If I get my prescriptions, I got to get them refilled up in Philadelphia. I thought about you and your program. How important is health care to veterans in the United States, not only in New Jersey, but all over the country, to make it easier and safer and faster?
The health care for any human is incredibly important. I just went through a health scare earlier this year where I came close to death, and I was blessed to have the best health care in the world. But I got to choose where I went, or at least the second point. And that's what we want to enable any veteran to do. So let's be clear, they sacrifice. You mentioned one of your friends there served at the Hanoi Hilton. I use this quote all the time from Senator McCain, service, something greater than yourself. And it is remarkable what people give up as young, typically young Americans, to serve our nation. They were the bearers of the burden of conflict. And people say deserve only the best. They deserve the best, but they also earned it from a grateful nation. And the veterans' hospitals and healthcare clinics around the country were an incredible idea back when they were developed close to a century ago. But healthcare today is complicated and it's expensive. And unfortunately, we as a nation have not funded our veterans' healthcare system the way I believe it should be.
Congressman Norcross, under your program, If I wake up on a Tuesday morning and don't feel good, I can go, if say I find a lump on my face and I need to go to a dermatologist. If I go to the VA, and the dermatologists are fine there, the VA health care, it's not the health care you get at the VA, it's trying to get to it. I got to drive 2 hours in the summer, in the winter, and then that becomes 4 hours in the summer if I get an appointment on a Friday or a Monday with the traffic. But I am a firm believer, and I'm not afraid of saying this, that if we don't use the Braven Stand Up Salute program for our Medicare veterans, and if we don't use your program for all veterans, including Medicare veterans, we're going to end up losing the VA someday, because a budget of $400 billion, Congress is going to get tired of writing those big checks. And a lot of it is not for health care. It's for clerical work to make sure that the doctor you're going to see, I call Philadelphia, then they got to find me a doctor. They got to make sure that doctor's in their system so they can pay them. And cut out all that, save the VA.
It's complicated, right? By any stretch, whether you're a veteran or just the average person in the street, healthcare is complicated, and we understand that. But simply, the bill that I introduced, Veterans Freedom and Healthcare Act, says you can choose where you want to get your health care. Now, for those who love to go to the veterans hospital or clinics, like in Philadelphia or in Delaware, you know, that's a two-hour drive from down the shore, as we say. So maintaining those standards and protecting the integrity of the VA, I think, is incredibly important, because many vets want to go there. But for whatever reason, you live too far away, you can't get an appointment, they should be able to choose where they want to get their health care. And that's the basis for the bill that I had introduced back in 2014. And obviously trying to get something through Congress at times gets very complicated, right? We know that. But at the end of the day, I think we as a nation come together and say, yes, they've earned it, they deserve it, and we should do it. So back in 18, a version of the bill I originally introduced was implemented that took that 30 and 40 day wait period. It threw that out and gave better accessibility, but it's not permanent. And that's what we continue to try to get through, is to make it permanent, because it's a balance. If you want to go up to Cooper, if you want to go to Virtual, if you want to go to AtlantiCare, and that's, you should be able to. But if you want to go to one of our veteran hospitals, God bless it, you should be able to go there. So it's that balance that we're trying to work both of those in, and not starve the veterans hospitals.
You know, Congressman, the VA only sees 30%, maybe 32% of veterans in the country. That's all. If they ever got a 10% increase, my God, they're going to need billions and billions of dollars more. What we need to do is have the VA take care. Look, everybody at this table is on Medicare, so we could pretty much go anywhere we want to go to. Let the VA pick up any copay. Am I better given an $800 doctor visit to Aetna or to the federal government? All I say in the program that we wrote is, let the VA, if there's a $50 copay, let the VA pay the copay, and let Aetna or Blue Cross or Blue Shield pay the rest of the bill. But if we don't save our VA is the best researchers for prosthetics. Philadelphia VA Hospital is now making prosthetics right in the hospital for blind veterans, for blood research, for diabetes, they're coming up with a cure they think in 5 years will do away with arthritis in arms and legs. I just sat on a committee, a meeting about that.
The traumatic brain injuries, they're wonderful.
That's what the VA should be focusing on our Iraq, Afghanistan, younger veterans that are really wounded seriously. Let us old guys go locally and not have to get, we're at the age now that pretty soon we're going to have to get our wives or our neighbors to drive us. We're getting too old. There's a couple things in your sponsored legislation I want to go over with you. I'm hearing a lot of making back pay to different groups of people, different organizations. I would like to see a bill passed to make a back pay for Vietnam veterans that got... Bill, you and I argue about this all the time. Do you remember what your pay was when you went to Vietnam?
No, but it was probably under $100.
Mine was $80 a month. Do you remember, Joe, what you got?
When I was a sergeant, I knew I got $300 a month plus...
Well, yeah, $300 a month, but you got promoted a few times. $80, we didn't even get minimum wage, Congressman. I think that's a bill that needs to be looked at for our veterans that are still living. And I'm not being selfish. I wouldn't take it. But when we talk about federal laws and then the federal government actually violated their own minimum wage, you know, I'm sitting next to Ralph Galati. Ralph, you were in the Hanoi Hilton. What was your bonus when you came home for 14 months?
$5 a day, tax-free.
But anyway, Congressman, we have a couple more subjects we got to talk to. We got to get to a fast one-minute break. And by the way, we had the honor of having your brother on last week.
Yeah. Wonderful.
And,
which one, as I say.
And I'll tell you what, with what you want to do for veterans and what your brother George wants to do for veterans is pretty incredible. It's pretty incredible. Hang on the line, sir. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everyone. WIBG 398 1020, the Welcome Home Show. Congressman, what can our show and what could we do to help you? I mean, you're the congressman down there in Washington, but if you ever need a voice for veterans that understand the healthcare system, I know Bill uses it, I use it, I'm sure Joe and Ralph use it. A lot of times, the VA, most of the people that work there aren't veterans, so they don't use the very system that we use. And they don't understand the problem. So what can we do to help you to better some of the bills that you want to pass to help get not only veterans health care, but jobs and legislation passed to make life better for our veterans?
So I sit on the Armed Services Committee for the last going on 12 years. And I will say our committee works in a bipartisan way. You don't hear that very often when we talk about Washington. We really do well together. Obviously, we have a few policy differences, but at the end of the day, for almost the last 65 years, we've passed what they call the National Defense Authorization Act. That's the only bill that has passed consistently in a bipartisan way. And I just wanted to mention, because you brought up the pay, the last two bills have substantially increased the base pay from the bottom up.
Yes.
Which long overdue. And the last thing I want to bring up is you talk about how do you continue to fund and take care of the existing VA and give people a choice. I am advocating on behalf of a pilot program to make a hybrid. So let's say you have a local hospital that is not a VA hospital. How about create a hybrid one that says if you go in the veterans entrance, you will be served by veterans in that hospital setting, that private hospital, where you're getting the best of both worlds, the most modern equipment and health care that you can get, which are typically, unfortunately, in our area hospitals, and being serviced by veterans, which so many of them want. So we're looking to do that without starving either side of the equation, but most importantly, focusing on those who need the health care.
And you know, sir, when we did our last show in the Battleship, New Jersey, you were there, Melinda Kane, Assemblywoman Melinda Kane. There was two Gold Star mothers, a Gold Star father. Ralph, you were on the boat, Bill. We also had five surgeons from Cooper. One of them was a neurosurgeon. They, Joe Daly, they all served time. Two or three tours in Iraq, Afghanistan. And if I'm correct, Cooper Hospital was a training center for doctors and nurses to go to war. how the mass units up, and what do you do when you run out of equipment? How you can make splints out of plywood, and I said to Dr. John Chivas, he did four or five. He was at Cooper a couple of years ago. Four or five tours. I said to him one time, Congressman, what do you do? You're in a mass unit out in the battlegrounds, and you get 20 casualties. Where do you get all the plasma? He said, Joe, we start calling veterans in, and we line them up in beds, and we start pumping their blood into the veterans that are dying. I said, but couldn't that be dangerous? He said, Joe, we'll keep that veteran alive, then we'll deal with if they got the wrong blood type later on. He said, that's the book that we write to keep people alive. And Cooper Hospital, your family's hospital, is the one that are doing that. And you've been doing it for a long time, haven't you, sir?
It's been a while, yes. It seems like only yesterday. Cooper actually does special forces training for emergency care there. We're looking to tie them in with a couple of the other groups, particularly those who are serving each and every day in places that do not have the extraordinary care that we do. Cooper does an incredible job, and we want to continue to make sure that their training, the best and the brightest, to take care of our service members literally around the world.
Congressman, your bill is so important personally to me. I live 4 miles from Cooper Hospital down here in Rio Grande, the courthouse. Bill, where do you live, a mile?
Less than a mile. I can see.
Less than a mile.
My yard.
Why do we have to drive 100 miles? So we're fully in support of your bill. I have another bill I would like you to look into. A lot of veterans that come home don't want to go to college. Congressman, you're an electrician by trade, correct?
I certainly am.
Yes, and probably very proud of it. Probably very proud of it. My question is, if Joe Griffey's didn't go to college, so I lose my GI Bill, why can't I use part of my GI Bill to buy a franchise, a legitimate startup franchise? I have my friend Jerry Flanagan. He has 400 junk dog removal franchises around the country, and then power washing franchise on top. He won't come to New Jersey because the regulations are so strong, but we'll take care of that with your good friend Mikey Sherrill, because he's a good friend of mine. But why can't a veteran tap into his GI Bill to start a franchise?
Great question. I often have this conversation because the narrative, quite frankly, around the country is you have to go to college to make it. You know what? If that's what you want to do, you want to become a doctor or a lawyer or an accountant, that's great. How about people like me? People who served our country, my son, my daughter-in-law, they should have a choice that they can use that GI Bill for other than college to help build a career. I've focused on that. I've had very heated discussions, even people from my own party who want to just forgive college debt. I said, that's great, but you have to make sure you take care of the other children.
Well, Congressman, let me ask you
something different.
All the colleges in the country, do they have electricity in them?
Yes, they do.
And it's guys like you that put it in there. So we wouldn't have classrooms if everybody went to school and nobody became a plumber, an electrician, a fixing roofs or laying carpet. And one other thing about this bill is if Joe Griffey goes to college 4 years and I get $150,000 that I don't have to pay back under the GI Bill as part of my salary for being in the military. But if they give me a $50,000 grant to buy a franchise, I may end up hiring 6 or 7 people immediately that are going to pay taxes every week, that the government's going to get that $50,000 back right away. If I go to college and it costs $200,000 and I come out and I have a $100,000 a year job, that money to be replenished back into the system is going to take Joe Griffey's paycheck 20 years. So sometimes when we step back, we can really see how we can actually save money and make money by doing things better by our veterans. Listen, take the last minute. Does anybody have a question they'd like to ask the congressman?
I just want to thank you for helping veterans and keeping playing. And I remember what you said on the battleship. I still use it. That health care should be measured by a watch and not by a calendar.
I love that saying.
That's a great saying. you were the first I heard it from. And my God, I say it to doctors sometimes. I say it when I get angry at the VA. So thank you. Thank you very much for.
And Congressman Mary Cruz and Sloan Gallagher. They're a reflection of how you take care of the people.
Hey, Joe, I just wrote a note. Franchise. I will look into it, and I'll report back when we get an answer.
Sir, you know where we're at whenever you need us. Not that we could do anything for you, but, we're a voice supporting what you do. And I said to your brother last week, there are parts of New Jersey that, I just found out about Red Bank in Gloucester that helped save Philadelphia during the Revolutionary War. And Amy Osborne from Homedale Memorial was on, and she said, Joe, people don't know about this 10-acre Memorial Museum Educational Center up in Homedale for Vietnam veterans. So I said to your brother, I said, how can we better educate people to bring their businesses back to New Jersey, come to New Jersey for education, and come to New Jersey to live? And he said, and I know she's a good friend of yours, he said, start putting Mikey Sherrill, Governor Sherrill, on the newspapers, televisions, when they see that smile. She's a veteran. People want to come running back. Sir, in a minute, how would you describe how lucky we are to have Congresswoman Sherrill as our governor?
Well, we are because, A, she understands it. From the educational side, and she was given one of the greatest educations at the Naval Academy, to serving our country, doing those dangerous jobs. Flying helicopters is not the safest job in the world. She's done terrific. And then serving in Washington for close to 8 years, understanding the complexities of trying to move forward in a bipartisan way. She's done a great job in Washington, and we're looking forward to it back in Trenton.
But I understand her job was so great in Washington because a congressman like Donald Norcross from the 1st District of New Jersey took her under his wing and got her used to Washington. And all that experience is now going to help everybody here in the state of New Jersey.
That's very kind, but Mikey earned every bit of that knowledge through the work she has done, not only in Washington, but for our country, with her service to our country. Incredible. Looking forward to a great 8 years as my governor. It will be exciting.
And there's four Vietnam veterans in this room now that appreciate you for what you're doing to help. Keep remembering us over 50 years later. He's still out there fighting. I mean, I'm home from Vietnam 56 years. And the congressman's still fighting. God bless you, sir.
All four of you. Thank you, and talk to you soon.
You got it, sir. Bye-bye. You're listening to Welcome Home Show. We'll be right back.
My heart was gone when we reached Avalon on the way to Cape May. Stone Harbor skies were blue. We were naming the
Welcome back, everyone. WIBG 398-1020, the Welcome Home Show. We're here with Bill Davenport, Logan Runyon, Ralph Galati, Joe Taylor, and your wife, Donna. That song, On the Way to Cape May, was written by and sung by, I don't believe it was written by, but it was sung by Al Alberts and the, what was the name of the group, Ralph? The
Four Aces.
Did Four Aces, Three Coins in a Fountain, all of them. And it was really, really just a great, great song. And Barbara was a big part of the Delaware County Veterans Memorial when it was being built.
Yes.
When it was being built, Joe, what was your title?
I was on the advisory board.
And now you're the president.
Yes.
Does it change much from being the president, advisory, to being the president?
Oh, yes. Everything stops here. Ralph is my sidekick and vice president, and we make sure everything gets
Can you describe the memorial?
Yes.
And where it's at, it's in Newtown Square, correct?
Yes, it's in Newtown Square on Westchester Pike between 252 and 352 in Newtown Square. It's totally devoted to honoring veterans. We are a total 501c3. Nobody has a salary. We all volunteer our time. And it's dedicated to every person who served in the armed forces, regardless of whether you're in Delaware County or wherever.
And my good friend, and I know she was your good friend, Linda Holden, was really one of the early backbones of... And Steve Neder was his name?
Steve Neder.
Yeah. He went to Linda and said, we don't have a memorial dedicating veterans. How did you come on the board? How did they reach you? I mean, you're chief of police, Springfield.
Yes.
And I always tried to get a ticket when I went to Springfield so I could tell the police, but call your boss up. Get your boss out here.
You can't
get I didn't go through that red light intentionally.
You can't get a ticket in Springfield because you can't travel more than 20 miles an hour on Baltimore Pike.
Yeah.
How I got involved with it was the actually Charlie Sexton. The Delaware County Veterans Magazine did an article on me. Nicole and her dad, Claude, saw the article, and they actually engraved what was part of what was on the article on the Vietnam column at the memorial, and that was my lead-in. But I went in with open arms. When I came home from Vietnam, like many Vietnam veterans, combat veterans, I had a serious case of survivor's guilt. I didn't know why I
survived. Hold on a minute. Hold on a minute. Say Vietnam.
Vietnam.
You kind of say, like my mother, most people say Vietnam, yeah. It's Vietnam.
Yeah.
It's Vietnam. My mother always would correct me. She said, Joe, it's not Vietnam, it's Vietnam. And I would say, Mom, but I was there. She said, I don't care where you are. Yeah. It's not the way you pronounce it. And you pronounce it correctly. I thought of my mom when you did that.
Yes, when I came home, I think it's every veteran's responsibility, especially combat veterans, to never forget their brothers and sisters who were left behind. My company lost 88 killed in action in Vietnam.
What part of Vietnam were you in?
We were down south, and then we became a light battalion when we were moved. We became a spearhead for a lot of operations, and that's where we had most of our casualties between.
So you go back to Vietnam?
No.
Did you go back?
I will never go back.
No, you went back for a second tour after you got in.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you go back to your same unit?
Yes, I did.
What did he say? What the hell is Daly doing here?
Yeah. You know, Joe, I hate to do this.
Did they know you were coming back?
Yes. I signed up before I left. And I was going to sign up for a third tour when my first sergeant pulled me aside and said, you know, when you go home, if you have less than a year to do, you're going to get out. I said, oh, that's great. So give me that piece of paper back. You know, so I withdrew my...
What made you want to go back? You know, and that was yours. That was your choice.
Yes. You know, I was 18 years old when I joined the Marine Corps. I was in high school. I wasn't drafted. I joined. And it was the first decision I made in my life. I'm one of 11 children. You know, kind of got lost in the shovel, but...
Monsignor Bonner, yeah. Graduate, and your wife went to Prendergast.
Yeah. So going into the Marine Corps was something I wanted to do. And God forgive me for saying that I was good at what I did. And... very dedicated and loyal to my friends I served with, so I went back.
But listen to what he said. He enlisted, as opposed to being drafted, went back for a second tour, knowing full well what happened on the first tour, would have probably gone back for a third tour. So these are the kind of folks that represented Vietnam veterans really well, but were always under the radar. You know, but this is a really good story worth telling because these are the extraordinary acts of Americans in a time when they were really being spat upon. So this is really it's important to be represented.
You know, I say all the time that you talked about being spit on and called a baby killer and even beat up. But if you came home and you were wearing your uniform and somebody spit on you or somebody insulted you, that happened probably one time. Even if you got guys, I know three or four guys got beat up. That happened one time. But know what I think the biggest, cruelest thing that happened to Vietnam veterans was? The silence. Nobody listened, and nobody talked to us, and we had nobody to talk to. And these things just kept boiling and boiling and boiling. And then when you did go to the VA to talk to them, well, they didn't believe that you had post-traumatic stress. Or they didn't believe that the Agent Orange, even though it killed animals, insects, vegetation, fish, wildlife, that it was okay. It wouldn't harm humans. It took 20 years for the VA to recognize post-traumatic stress. It wasn't until the first Gulf War that guys started coming back with post-traumatic stress. Did you guys ever hear of traumatic brain injury in Vietnam?
No.
You don't think Bob Riley has a traumatic brain injury? He was with a 155 howitzer 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, a year in Vietnam. They learned that what we were saying, we weren't making up or we weren't lying, because post-traumatic stress, TBI, a lot of Agent Orange. I think Agent Orange opened up to really bring recognition to the burn pits in Iraq and Afghanistan. We had burn pits in Vietnam. I didn't see many of them, but we had them, so I was told. But we learned so much from our Vietnam veterans. And I got to tell you what, every Vietnam veteran I have has a certain character about them that they're proud of what they did, but they're not looking for a pat on the back. You know? How did you get on the police force, Joe?
When I first came back, it was that's something I just wanted to do. Like I told you, I love service. And it seemed to me the continuation of the military would be police work, and I'd be able to help people on a regular basis. But I got a great story. I came home from Vietnam. I had been sick. I weighed about 135 pounds. And I went to take the police test. I had the height, but you had to have to weigh 165 pounds. I go to stand on the scale, and to my amazement, I got to 165 pounds. When I look back, Sergeant Bernie Lockhart was standing on the scale, and he said, "You're sure as hell not going to get any skinnier." So that's how I wound up on the police force.
Joe, did you find yourself prejudiced towards wanting to hire veterans?
Oh, I love veterans.
Did you kind of like bring them to the front of the line and? But and they're trained. Yeah. Veterans trained.
We had civil service rules. We had to follow them. But one of the new rules in Pennsylvania was we had a rule of three. But if there was a veteran even if it's a third candidate, he automatically moved up to number one, and they got 10 extra points on their written and oral scores, so that moved them to the front of the line.
You know, I asked Governor Sherrill last Sunday. I was talking to her. And I said, well, you made it through your first snowstorm. She had a policeman die, a state trooper die. She had a fireman. And she said, Joe, my training in Annapolis and my training being a helicopter pilot, she said, I never fear getting up in the morning. She said, something comes along. That's what we're taught as a veteran. We deal with it. I'm sure you had the same phone calls and same police calls. It would have to be a little bit of a letdown being a policeman in Springfield than coming back from the battlefields in Vietnam. I mean, it's kind of like two different animals, isn't it?
Yeah, I started my career in Lowell Marine. I did 39 years in Lowell Marine before I went to Springfield. But policing is what you make it. You know, it can be, I always found it to be, define me. It was something that I felt that I was directly connected with.
Do you think policemen and firemen went too long and the EMTs went? I guess if it wasn't for 9/11, that kind of woke up everybody and said how brave these firemen are. And, you know, people are running from the fire, they're running into it. Same with our policemen. Policemen aren't doing anything different today than they did 100 years ago. They're out there serving the people, protecting the public.
Yep.
They do deserve our respect, don't they?
Yes. We have two basic principles in policing: protect lives and property. That's our two biggest primary objectives.
Yeah. Do you miss the everyday putting the uniform on?
Oh, yes. Guys actually thought they were going to sew the handles in my uniform when I died and put me to the ground that way.
Listen, we got a guy, Forrest, on the phone. He's sitting there with Forrest. Welcome. How you doing, my friend?
Hey, how you doing, Joe? Thanks again, man, for having me on.
You're here with Bill and Ralph and Logan and Joe Daly. Where are you at now?
Where am I as far as residing or working?
Are you working? You're a policeman, correct?
Correct, yeah. I work in Morristown, New Jersey, which is Burlington County. Not Morristown, but Morristown.
Hey, I got to meet the governor over that mistake and become good friends with her. Thought I was going to Morristown. I went to Morris County, and it's a long story. But you're a detective, correct?
Correct, yeah.
And you're also you're a Marine, correct?
I sure am, yes, sir.
Yeah, we're here with Joe Daly. Just retired. He was chief of police at Springfield. How many years, Joe, were you total? 50?
54.
54 years. And Bill Davenport is a Marine also. And where did you serve at, Iraq or Afghanistan?
Iraq. I was in Iraq in early 2003. And, you know, other than that, you know, I've been to Kosovo. It was a peacekeeping operation. And been to Norway for some training and stuff like that. But I was in Iraq in 2003.
Forrest, I just asked Joe the question. Does being a policeman when you go home, especially in Morristown or Springfield, it's been to like Fallujah. This guy seemed boring every day. Why the same? What the hell am I putting a gun for here on my hip in America? I mean, yeah, Iraq, Afghanistan are some really bad places. Not bad places. Bad places in the world. They're at the top.
Yeah, it was. You know, I joined the. I started out in Edgewater Park, again, Burlington County. I started out there in 2008. So. It was a couple years after I'd gotten out of the Marines, and, you know, there was something that I wanted to, I had a void that I was missing, and, so, yeah, it's crazy to come from, you know, Iraq or, you know, a place overseas where it's not even really, like, fully civilized yet, you know, and to come back home and, you know, but I felt like that the purpose that I had was to continue on, even though I decided to get out of the military was to, you know, basically do something along the same line. So, you know, getting in the police work was quasi-military. You know, you still, you know, you wore the uniform and, you know, you went out and you know, protect and serve, which is, you know, the mission. And so I decided to, you know, get into law enforcement. And then I worked in Edgewater Park for a couple of years and ended up in Delanco after I got laid off. Worked in Delanco for a few years, and then I moved on to Morristown. Bigger department and a little bit more opportunity. So, but yeah, it's something that I always wanted to do, you know, after the military and, you know, so, but yeah, it's crazy to think, but, you know, there's bad people over here, there's evil over here, so, you know, we have to do our best to try to combat that, so.
You know, you said Edgewater Park. The great Diane Allen, Senator Diane Allen, had many years as senator. And you guys might remember Diane Allen. Mm-hmm. She was a news commentator on 6 or 10, mm-hmm. one of the states, for many, many years. She was like the female Walter Cronkite. Everybody believed Diane Allen. And then she gets in politics. She's the one that helped me get through the Veterans Beach Badge up in Trenton. Free beach tags for veterans in the state of New Jersey. And Diane Allen was from, I believe she still lives in Edgewater Park.
Yeah, we would have, you know, the calls where, you know, these crazies would, you know, either, you know, start stalking her or whatever. So, you know, I definitely remember, you know, getting those alerts and that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I'm not really sure if she's still in the area or not, but I definitely remember when I was over that way, she was definitely still in the area. And I think one of her offices was up on Route 130 maybe in either Cinnaminson or Delran or something.
Yeah. Listen, you also have forest flags. You make wooden flags, correct?
Yes, yeah, yeah. I got into doing that. I happened to be out of work in 2020.
Wait a minute. What year were you in Iraq?
2003.
I know I'm a dumb Vietnam veteran, but if you're in Iraq in 2003, how are you unemployed?
No. This was... So in,
Joe, do you mean anybody, and Ralph, Bill, anybody coming back from Iraq, Afghanistan, then dirtball countries, should ever be unemployed?
No. I had gotten hurt on the job in 2019. So in 2020, I ended up, I was basically like out of work. I was like going through the whole workman's comp thing, and I had hurt my back or whatever. So. I started making wooden flags basically as like a feel good, just to try to, it was like an art therapy basically. And mm-hmm. so I made a flag and I was like, man, this is awesome. This is like, it really felt good to get out into the garage and just, and during that time, that was during COVID. So the kids were home. You know, I was going through what I was going through and with my back pain, my mental, status. I mean, it was not a good time. So I started making these wooden flags, And it basically had a really good response when I started showing people and all that kind of stuff. So we ended up figuring on, okay, this is a great way to...
Wait a minute. Hold on a minute. Do you remember how we met?
Yeah, I remember how we met.
We were at...
we were at the Cranberry Festival.
Well, no, I think it was before that, I think. I met you through Charlie Strange, whose son Michael died, was in the building when they killed Bin Laden. And Charlie said, Joe, you got to get this guy on your show. Forrest, he makes flags and blah, blah, blah. And that's how I met you, because you donated when Charlie Strange had tight lines over in Summers Point, a fundraiser. Yeah. You donated flags for him to auction off. That's how I met you.
Yes, he did. He put us in contact with each other, and then we had spoke, and then you had come to the Cranberry Festival because I said I was going to be there, and we met actually in person, and now I've seen you every year.
Well, we kind of met the last 10 years at the Cranberry Festival. You know, Ralph, I guess the flag, tell us quickly about the flag that your guy made in the cell.
There were a couple of them that made flags, and as you know probably better than anybody, it represents America. It represents your home. It represents freedom. And when you don't have it, it's important that you find it. And we had one guy that actually stitched a crude but effective one on the inside of his POW top so that every morning he could take that top off, turn it inside out, and he and his roommates could say the Pledge of Allegiance. And they would do that regardless of repercussions, regardless of punishment, regardless of anything else.
And they did get beat when they got caught.
It's just, it didn't matter. It's just like a church service. You would do it because it was important to you, and whatever happens, whether they beat you or starved you or whatever, it didn't matter. That's how important it was. So so you're part of that lineage, and I appreciate what you're doing and creating something from scratch and knowing that somebody else really appreciates what that flag stands for.
That really, piece of wood really will be a flag the rest of its life. Yeah. I got one hanging in my house.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, and I do. I appreciate when people – that's one of the best things, that I – get from that is when I do make a flag and knowing that it's going into somebody's home to be either a present or even for their own purchase, and when I see them take a picture with the flag and the smile that they have, and sometimes it's for a family member that who has passed but had served in whether it was the law enforcement or the military, and they want to do something to honor them, and they purchase a flag or like a challenge coin holder flag where it's a flag, but you can display your challenge coins, and that's one of the things that Joe had purchased from me was a challenge coin holder. But just to that, it just makes it all the better, and all my reasoning for keep going, because it's been we're going on our sixth year with Forrest.
And you also we only got a minute left, so you also have apparel, shirts and hats and all that stuff you make.
Yeah, we have shirts, we got hoodies, we got all types of stuff. So
give a number and a web page where people can buy. That's our purpose here, is to promote what you're doing today.
The website is www.forrestflags, so it's FORRESTS Flags, FLAGS.com. And it's one website, and all our stuff is on there. The apparel, we even got into like private label coffee, and we have honey. I got into beekeeping a few years ago. I just try to stay busy and try to keep my mental clarity as clear as I can. And
Stay away from people like me. Then you won't have too many mental problems in life.
But that's our purpose. So, we raise money for veterans organizations, and which Joe and Charlie Strange has, directed me to certain, organizations. And the Michael Strange Foundation is a great one for Gold Star family members. And, that's what our mission here at Forest Flags is. We raise money for veterans organizations and other organizations as well. But we primary focus, being that I'm a Marine veteran and a police officer, I try to direct my charity raising money, funds, and all that kind of stuff towards that type of organization. So,
listen, we got to go to a break. Tell your family I said hello. God bless. God bless, my friend. And right, keep staying healthy and safe out there on the roads, all right?
All right, thank you. Keep in touch. Semper Fi.
You got it. You're listening to Welcome Home Show. We'll be right back.
Steel horses thunder, you can hear those pistons ring. From the Legion Hall to the next small town, we keep on riding, never slowing down. Side by side, ain't nothing stronger than this kind of pride. We're rolling with the Legion, flag held high.
Welcome back, everyone. WIBG 398-1020, the Welcome Home Show. Dave, are you with us?
Yes, how you doing?
Warrant Officer Dave, heard of you.
Radio.
Where you at now, Dave?
Well, I'm back in Havre de Grace, Maryland. You know, when we spoke, I was on the road doing the cage run, the recon for this year's 2026 legacy run.
Now,
so
now I'm
back home.
Where was that at when you were doing the legacy? Where was that
at? Well, right now it's still confidential since it's not in the final stages. But,
okay.
We were riding in the beautiful byways and highways of what America has to offer. So,
yeah, now you live in Georgia, correct?
No, my number is a Georgia number, but I actually moved to Havre de Grace, Maryland in 2013, and that's where I live now.
I want to introduce you to Ralph Galati's here. Ralph is a prisoner of war, 14 months Vietnam veteran. Joe Daly did two tours in Vietnam. Then 53 years in law enforcement when he came back home, and then Bill Davenport built the Vietnam Wall that the Sun Shore flag will be flying behind, and Bill's a Marine Vietnam veteran, and you're going to have some really, I don't even know if you could put a price tag on that cargo that you're going to be carrying from Pittsburgh to Arlington or to I guess you'd say Washington.
Washington D.C. Yeah.
Do you know yet? When you get to Washington, it's probably going to be for the 4th of July, isn't it?
Yeah, so we're actually going to have kickstands up at about 6:15 the morning of July 4th. We're going to be leaving from Grant Avenue in front of the National Flag Foundation across the street from the Steel Building, and we're going to head down to Washington, D.C. We plan on being there around 12 o'clock. And it's going to be a beautiful run. It's going to be roughly 250 of America's finest riders from the American Legion family and American Legion riders. And we're going to, it's a historical event for us. And it's an honor to be able to not only lead this event, but to have the opportunity to plan this event with such great Americans, patriotic Americans, as we take not just one flag, but two flags that have flown over 26 national cemeteries and all over the country to our national capital in D.C. So it's a great honor to do that.
Now, I was talking to your friend, Rommel, who's the chairman, along with Bunny Walsh, of this on your journey, that your journey of the fight that started last June on the Army's birthday. And I kind of tweeted it a little bit on last week's show because they weren't sure if they could get it done. And I'm looking on my phone because Bonnie Walsh had to say hello to you. She's the co-chair of this project. And Rommel was able to get the Sanjour flag to fly at the Super Bowl. But before, according to Bonnie, before they flew it on the ground, the four or five jets that flew over the stadium, one of the pilots was holding the flag in his hand. And then when the jets landed, they brought it to the stadium. They hung the flag back up. And then, you know, Bill, how big is this flag coming to Wildwood?
You mean
the Sanjour flag and the POW?
The Sanjour is a standard flag, 3x5.
Yeah.
It was picked off the shelf. If you remember, Bunny said that it was intentionally, instead of being one of a kind, it
they
was
didn't want anything
one
fancy.
It was a regular flag.
And Joe, you do a flag ceremony every week. That's really important, isn't it? People come out for it. And
we do a very nice job refolding the flag, representing it to a family member. And the most important part to me is a family member gets to speak about their deceased veteran. And it's like they come back alive at that memorial just for a few minutes. So.
Yeah. Dave, now the 250 bikers that you estimate that you're going to have going from Pittsburgh to Washington, are they from the Pittsburgh area? Are they going to be from all over the country?
Well, no. I actually have two missions on that day. So the 250-plus riders that are going to be following me down to D.C., are probably going to come from all over the country. Our registration for that event is due to open up at the beginning of the month in March. And so we're going to close it down after we hit about 275 riders. But we also have another event. We have simultaneously going to Harrisburg and Philadelphia to Independence Hall. We have two more flags that 13 riders from the Department of Pittsburgh or Pennsylvania will be taking. And the significant, those are the same type of flags that will be going down there. And the significance is that those flags have flown in all 67 counties of Pennsylvania, and they're going to be given one to, I believe, the governor's office and the other one to Independence Hall. But our flag, the main flag, is going down to D.C.
Dave, how do you feel? How did you get hooked up with Rommel, and how do you feel about he's going to hand you that flag and say, hey, I guess from Pittsburgh to Washington's got to be, what, 300 miles, 400 miles?
It's actually, the route that I have is 250 miles.
And he's taking this flag that flown 26 cemeteries, 10 continents,
yep,
5 territories, Notre Dame, Super Bowl.
Yep.
It's going to fly in Washington. I mean, in Wildwood, New Jersey. How does it make you? How does that make you feel? Having the responsibility of guarding that flag during that trip.
Well, for me, you know, being a first generation Hispanic that served in this country, our nation, in support of our nation, I'm humbled and honored to have the opportunity on this historical event to get the flag given to me and take it to our nation's capital. So it's surreal, it's humbling, and I don't take it for granted because not too many people will be able to say, I held a flag that flew over all these areas and was responsible for taking it from the National Flag Foundation to where it's going to reside so that others can see this flag. That's a humbling honor to have bestowed upon me. And those riders that will be riding with me, because they will be part of this. I'm the one who's lucky enough to have it in my possession, but they're the ones who are going to be escorting that flag with me down to D.C. So it's a surreal experience that I'm looking forward to it. And the way I got hooked up with Rommel was, as you know, my job, I'm the national chairman of the American Legion Riders Advisory Committee, and our past national commander, then Seehafer, was in contact with the National Flag Foundation, and they I was asked to write a letter to Rommel saying that we would be more than happy to escort the run, this flag, to D.C. And that's more or less how my conversation started back in December with Rommel. And since then, we've had a few meetings. We've met with some other folks down in D.C. And the planning is about 95% done. It was going to be a great ride. And that's how I met him. So it was by a fluke. And by being appointed the chairman of this committee, you know, the fourth chairman under the American Legion Riders, that was bestowed on me. So that's more or less how that we met.
I guess the last question I have for you, and we want to thank you. We're going to have you back on again before May 22nd to promoting, getting updates with what you're doing. But I guess this Sun's Your flag might be one of the most traveled flags in the history of our country.
Yeah.
What do you think, Joe and Bill and Ralph? Could you think of a flag that has appeared in so many different parts of the world?
Certainly not one that went to all those cemeteries to represent our fallen troops. So that's really significant by itself, right?
You know, and it's Americans like you, Dave, and Bunny, and Mike Knapp at the battlefield that just step up to the plate and say, hey, we can get this done. And aren't they a great bunch of people to work with? You know, no egos. It's all about the flag. It's like Joe Daly and Ralph, the Delaware County Veterans Memorial. It's all about the veterans. It's not about egos. It's not about I or me or what we can do. And I think that's what makes the difference between success and failure with organizations. Listen, is there anything that you want to add? Now, what do you guys take the bike in to get checked on a run like that? Make sure that everything's up to snuff?
Yeah, so what will happen is on July 3rd, and this, all of this will be on the registration page. Yeah. On July 3rd, I will expect the riders will come in check in Pittsburgh, and we will have the bikes checked to make sure that they're ready for the 250-mile ride to D.C. We'll have a support vehicle in case something happens, and there is a fuel stop along the way, but that's basically what happens. You check, you register online, you check in on July 3rd, we leave on July 4th, we go halfway, get fuel, not that we have to, but that's just something that we do when we have large parties of rides like this, and then we'll end up in D.C. And then from there, the flag will be handed over to whoever it needs to be, and our mission will be complete.
Dave, do you have to get a permit to go into Washington with that many bikes?
As of right now, we're still in the negotiation phase with the Metro Police of D.C. I have a follow-up meeting with law enforcement coming up, but it doesn't seem like we're going to need one because of the route that we're going to come into the first stop. It comes right off the interstate, right off the BWI. And we go to where we're going. So I don't want to jinx us by saying where we're going to stop. But when we come back in May, I'll have a detailed point of what we're going to do, and then what we're going to do with the flag. By then, the finalized process will be taken care of, and I'll be able to talk more about it. But the main thing is, we want people to line the streets when they see us coming. So that's why in May, when I get back on here, I'll tell you exactly where we're going to go, and people can see us along the route and stand on the side of the roads with their flags and wave and be part of this historical event, right?
Yep. Listen, God bless you, my friend. Stay safe, and we'll be talking to you shortly.
You're listening. Sounds good. Y'all be safe. Thank you for this opportunity to talk to you.
You got it. You're listening to Welcome Home Show. We'll be right back.
Man, wait!
Welcome back, everybody. As we always do, and today being February 15th, we announced the birthdays and the casualties on the Vietnam Memorial Wall in Washington, D.C., and Wildwood, New Jersey, and numerous other places throughout the country. Today, there have been 158 birthdays, six of those from New Jersey. Casualties, 203, with four from New Jersey. No local men or women, but I will get back to that in a minute. There were two nurses that died. Second Lieutenant Elizabeth Ann Jones, United States Army. She was born September 12, 1943. She died February 18, 1966. She was from Allendale, South Carolina. She and her partner, Second Lieutenant Carol Ann Drabaza, United States Army, born December 11, 1943, and died February 18, 1966. You'll notice the same date. They died together in a helicopter crash. She was from Dunsmore, Pennsylvania. Both of them were, each of them were 22 years old. No life other than studying at grade school, high school, college, a year in the Army, and a helicopter. Now, we do no local men, but I did come across this week, and I'll have more information soon. And if any listeners out there can call me or contact me, I need more information on Michael Davis Reeves. Possibly from Middle Township. He died in Vietnam on May 20th, 1968. So call me, 609-827-0588, if you have any information. Again, he's probably from Middle, but maybe from Lower. He's buried at the Presbyterian Cemetery on Seashore Road in Lower Township.
Bill, do you have the four names of the guys from Jersey?
No, I don't have the names. Typically, I only do the Tri-County area here because the numbers would be exhausting.
Yeah, I know their names will be on the wall at the home deal. So listen, we got Jerry Tempest, one who's we're trying to get elevated to the Medal of Honor, shot in the head, doo-wop singer, South Philly. We got Peggy Collins, one whose dad founded the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Museum. And we have Richard Azaro, who's the founder of co-founder of the Tomb Guards down in Arlington. But Ralph, you know, we're here with Ralph and Joe Daly, Marine, and Bill. You know, Ralph, you want to ask Joe Daly some questions.
So Joe is the president of the Delaware County Veteran Memorial, and we're really blessed to have him there.
So any idea? I don't know if I'm allowed to ask. You can tell me no. I get told no all the time anyway, especially by the chapel. But, I told him I wouldn't say nothing. Any idea how much money the memorial and then the chapel next to it, what's invested in that memorial, so people know you're serious?
It's over $3 million at max minimum.
No government funding.
No government. And you're also building
a Veterans Hall.
And what's that going to run?
I think it's under another million. I think it's like $700,000 or $800,000.
With Joe's leadership, the thing is we have more programming now, we have more outreach now, we have more needs for funds, but we're reaching more veterans organizations and the community. And one of our biggest events coming up, it's probably other than our dinner, our fundraising dinner, is the one we do every year on Flag Day. And this year it's Friday, June 12th. We do it every year at the memorial. And Joe can describe what the purpose of that is and some of the recognition for this year.
What we do with the board, we select six or seven Delaware County veterans that served their country with distinction and then continued to serve. We call it after the medals. When they got home, they continued to do public service or veteran services or something like that. And we identify them. And I'm really pleased to say the program's so successful, I'm already working on the recipients for 2028. So it's a time where we take that night and we honor them. There's a video up there. We do a video.
We did our radio show there 3 or 4 years.
That's correct. You
were never sure to guess that night. They were coming in droves. And what did you have, about 500 people at dinner that night?
Yeah, we average about 550 to the dinner every year.
Everybody wants to get on the radio. Yeah. I mean, really, we were right there in the lobby as people came in. And then we went to the dinner afterwards.
And on Flag Day, we honor the Army and all the Army veterans. We also, with Comcast, we do a retirement flag ceremony. So every American flag that the VFWs and Comcast collects during the year, we have a formal ceremony where the flags are burnt. We actually get guests to come in line with flags, and they put them in the burn pit after the ceremony. So it's a pretty good thing. One other thing I really want to talk about is our education program. You know, the children in our country today, they don't get civics anymore. They don't know how these things work. We pay for the kids to come out. We pay for the buses to bring the children to the memorial. And we veterans tell them about the cost of freedoms that they deserve or they've earned and through this country. Not that any politician ever gave it to them or anybody else. It's on the backs of those willing to serve their country and put their lives at risk. At the end, they get a copy of the Constitution. They actually get a book on how laws are passed because they don't get it in civics anymore. And it's very interactive between the veterans and the students. We also do scouts. I had a bowling team out there. I've had a hockey team. We've had nursing homes, bus veterans out. And it's really an emotional experience for everybody.
Your groundbreaking had two governors speaking.
That's correct.
Tom Ridge, a Vietnam veteran, and who was the other governor? Governor of Pennsylvania was there also at the time.
Corbett.
Governor Corbett. Yes. And if I'm not mistaken, if memory serves me right, the MC was General Patton's grandson.
That's correct.
So the way that Joe just described the big event we have, big dinner we have in November with these Freedom Medal recipients, but he also has a distinguished separate recognition, a President's Award, that he does every year on Flag Day. So maybe he could explain that.
Yes. We have a committee that we take in nominations for the medal. And our host today, Joe Griffiths, was nominated for the medal. But our rules are they have to live in Delaware County. But the President's Award is given to anybody who has devoted themselves outstanding service to veterans. And Ralph made the nomination. And everybody on the committee couldn't think of any more deserving person than Joe Griffiths.
Well, I disagree. I think there are more deserving people. But I was blessed that my involvement came when Nicole was at a luncheon to raise money for the Mary Walker statue. Mary Walker is the only Medal of Honor recipient from Vietnam. And by the way, we're back on track of getting the Coatesville Hospital named for Mary Walker. And Nicole, whose father donated all the ground and the land and all, and probably a lot of money.
Oh, yes.
And De Patton is his last name?
Claude De Patton.
Yeah, and Nicole stood up at the luncheon at the Mary Walker House in Valley Forge and said, how can we get the word out about our grand opening? It was about 8 or 9 months away, 10 months away. And Missy Farcouche, father's a Marine, General Livingston, you probably met General Livingston or know a Medal of Honor recipient, Vietnam veteran, said, yeah, get hold of my friend Joe. Nicole calls me, and she said, I'm going to put you in touch with Barbara Zippy. And that's when my life changed, when you meet Barbara Zippy. And Barbara made contacts, and for every week we have one or two people, one promoting the memorial, and I got to meet Linda Holden. No offense to anybody in this room or whatever. Linda was a special human being to me. Called me every Saturday after our show on the way home. I get a phone call, a text, or an email. And there's never a good time. God didn't do us a favor when he took Linda Holden from this earth. I really believe that, you know.
If you're a listener to this program and you're available on Friday, June the 12th, the Delaware County Veteran Memorial, it's a great ceremony, and you could join us in recognizing Joe Griffin.
Peggy Collins, you with us?
I sure am.
Peggy, you know Ralph. Ralph, don't we have to get Joe
Peggy,
Joe down?
I'm Ralph. I can't wait.
Don't we have to get Joe Daly down?
I'm hoping to see you soon.
To the Forgotten Warrior Museum. Peggy's dad started 25 years ago, Peggy, the Forgotten Warrior Museum.
The building was built in 2008, but I think he started
in the museum
his journey about 2001.
Peggy's dad, Tommy, had a couple of helicopters. He was a door gunner, and he was working at the airport museum. And somebody, I think he had some of his medals and whatever, and somebody came in and said, can I give you my husband's? And before you knew it, he got a trailer, a mobile home across the street and a lot. Now they got a building and they got helicopters and everything. It's a museum. I think maybe one of the most filled with objects Vietnam Veteran Museum in the country. Really, I mean, there's everything in there from a Marmite can to a Lister bag to a M60, M50, Claymore mines, everything. And everything's, it's very neat, isn't it, Ralph? Everything's organized and tagged and all. And Peggy, it's just, it's, give an address where the museum is.
Well, it's at the Cape May Airport. And the actual address is 529 Forestal Road in Rio Grande. And but just Google Cape May, New Jersey Airport, and that'll take you right there.
I'm sure. I'm sure we could twist Joe Daly to make a maybe as an old hat or scarf, or I don't know what the hell Marines wore in Vietnam or something, to the museum with his name on it. What's it?
A tuxedo.
Yeah, one of his tuxedos that he wears. Yeah. Ralph donated. We don't want to put pressure on Joe, but can you tell us what Ralph donated? You had to get a mannequin for it.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. His flight suit, the bracelet, there was a booklet, and we have a whole case with just representing Joe and his co-pilot and his story as much as possible. Right next to another mannequin is that's dressed, you know, in the Air Force uniform. We're just so honored and proud. I'm just like... every time I think about that day, Ralph, I just can't thank you enough for coming, and I'm hoping to see you again soon on March 29th if you're around.
I'm coming, baby. I am almost there.
Gosh, I'm so
I am
excited.
Studying.
So
I'm studying and preparing well in advance.
And Joe Daly, Peggy's dad, did not want this stuff to end up on a flea market table or in the trash.
No, everything's a story. He said he did not want anything to end up in a landfill or, you know, or the trash after a Vietnam veteran passed away. And this is just one of his heartfelt missions, that he wanted to save the stories, save the items, and not let the Vietnam veterans be forgotten.
And listen, hold on there, man. We're going to bring you back up. Get the dates ready. With you got some events coming up in March, and you and I are going Monday to a dinner at the with the Rotary in Ocean City.
Nope, we're going to the Ocean County Exchange Club.
Exchange Club.
Yes, it's the Exchange Club of Ocean County.
Stay with us, Peggy. Richard, are you on?
Yep. Hey, how are you?
Here's one of my dear friends. We talk every day, and Richard is one of the founders of the Tomb Guard that guards the tombs of the unknown soldier in Arlington. And he was also worked for Judge Sirica. He was a lawyer in Judge Sirica's office during the trial. Well, I mean, Richard, don't we sit for hours talking about Sirica?
We do.
You know, what would Sirica do with this, and what would Sirica do with that? But, Richard, how important are our tomb guards?
Well, you know, I come from it from the point of view of being one, and that they're very important to the country. I mean, there's no doubt about that. What they do and the service they perform America's sacred duty to never, ever forget. And doing that, that's what defines them and their mission. And that is something that we can never let be diminished or in any way... allowed to fade away.
What are their hours of operation?
Hours of operation, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. It's continuous. There's no hours of operation. They have daylight, night hours in terms of designating the way they guard the tomb and conduct the honors. But they're there all the time. Right now, there's somebody down there, and there's somebody down all the time. That's the simple all the time.
Richard, I got word the other day through Patrick Hughes that a good friend of ours was a little bit under the weather, Pat Blassie. Now, Pat Blassie's, Joe, I don't know if you recognize that name. I know Ralph has known and Bill knows her. Pat Blassie's brother, Michael, was Navy pilot. No, Air Force pilot, because she spent 30 years in the Air Force, retired as a colonel, to honor her brother. Her brother was accidentally put in the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier in Arlington for 12 years, until they realized that they knew who was in there, and of course they had to exhume his body and rebury him, so I'm saying. And Patricia devoted her whole life to telling her brother's story and going around defending Vietnam veterans. And she's a little bit under the weather now. And it was nice of you to send the word out to your association, Ralph. I mean, Richard, to keep her and everyone to keep her in their prayers.
Oh, yeah, we know Patricia very well, and we care about her. And of course, we have a very special relationship with her brother.
Yeah, that is true. You know, Richard, I need a favor, and I don't know if I should ask this over the phone, but what the hell?
You're doing a Joe Griffey's on me.
Yeah, pulling a Joe Griffey's on you. But I would really like to get Bill and Ralph and Joe Daly down and maybe tour under the tomb where the guards live and stay, and they prep. And Richard is a former, besides being an Army tomb guard, he's also a policeman before he was a lawyer. Weren't you very happy at a job, Richard? You go from being a lawyer, being a cop, being in the Army.
Yeah, I loved every one of them. There was an old Englishman who said to me later in life, I wish I met him earlier, he said, find something you like to do and you'll never work a day in your life. I never worked a day in my life. I loved every moment of every one of those positions.
I was telling these guys that you worked for Judge Sirica that handled the Watergate trial.
Yeah.
That was a life experience right there, wasn't it?
Oh my gosh, yeah. It was a life experience for a lot of us, but for me it was very, pivotal, life-changing, actually. I got to work with and be next to a great American, one of the bravest men I ever met, a great American. He was my father-in-law. He gave me, not father-in-law, in-law, that's wrong. He gave me the law. That man taught me things about the law that I found nowhere else, and I used it with good effect later on.
We would have loved to have him on the show. Him and Frank Rizzo are two guys that I would have loved to have on the radio show. We had Joe, Bill, remember when we had Joe Rizzo on?
Yeah, Joe was a regular.
Mm-hmm. Joe was great. Joe was Frank's brother, who was the fire commissioner. And he would call me on a Saturday morning and say, I'm coming to the show. I said, all right, we pick him up and bring him up and all. Hold on a minute. And the invite, you know, we got to work on that. We'll come down to Washington someday.
No, I was going to go back, but don't let it go. Absolutely. And I was just thinking the best way to do that. I mean, we can do it anytime, but we have that ceremony, Flowers of Remembrance.
Yes.
Where they open the chains up, and that would be a great day for you guys to come down as a group, and then, you know, we'll get it all done. And absolutely, I'd love to be able to have the tomb guards meet you guys, and you meet the tomb guards.
Wait a minute, I got a friend of yours on the line, too. And by the way, Ralph, Richard, say hello to Peggy Collins. Her dad has one of the best Vietnam veteran museums in the country.
I've studied it, and Joe's told me so much about it. Yeah, so proud of you guys. Thank you for doing that.
But wait a minute. We have another Vietnam veteran. Jerry, you with us?
I'm here.
Where you at now?
Right now, I'm driving on 42.
Yeah. Be careful. Last time you got in 42, you ended up getting a ticket, remember?
I'm going within the speed limit.
Yeah. Senator Beach hasn't talked to me since I chewed his ass out for letting you get a traffic ticket on 42. But anyway, that's another story. But we have Richard Azzaro and Peggy Collins on the phone. Jerry, you were with Patrick Hughes and myself when we went under the tomb for a visit. Wasn't that quite an experience?
It was great to see the tomb guards in action. And then also go behind the scenes and see how they prepare, how dedicated they are to the job.
Hey, right, Joe and Ralph, we were right down there where they eat. You might have been with us. Right, where they eat, where they sleep. And, Jerry, wasn't it something when they're standing in front of a mirror and they got a person in front of them, behind them, and on each side with masking tape picking the lint off their uniform? Really?
Everything has to be perfect, and it was perfect.
Yeah. Jerry, do you remember Richard? I put the rifle down. It was too heavy. But remember, they were trying to teach you how the twirl. Remember that, Richard?
No, you didn't put it down. You're the one. Jerry didn't want any part of it. You're the one I did the inspection on. I wanted to show you what it was like when they took the rifle away from the Sentinel, about how fast it was, and And you were, you know, the first time you did it, you looked like I was going to have to treat you for shock.
And if I'm not mistaken, didn't they bring their 45 out and they let us handle their 45?
Oh, yeah. And you got the, they embraced you guys. Once they, well, I had told them who Jerry was and who you were, and they were waiting for you guys. And once it started, you could see they couldn't get enough of you, and they really enjoyed you guys. And
Everybody stay there. Everybody stay where you're at. We got to take a fast break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Welcome Home Show. Welcome back, everyone. WIBG 39810, trying to Welcome Home Show. We're here with Ralph Galati, Bill Davenport, Joe Daly, Jerry Tampesta, Peggy Collins, and Richard Azzaro. Richard, we were talking about, Joe, ask Richard about the storm.
Rich, I was talking about the hurricane that came through, and they told you guys to stand down, and they refused to do it.
No, that's one of the many stories that got out there, and someone thought they were doing the country and the Tomb Guards a favor by somehow portraying them as having some higher morality. Those are professional soldiers out there. And with this specific incident, I was involved in that. I wasn't at the tomb at the time, but I knew the regimental commander, the sergeant of the guard, and the sentinels. And what happened was what you would expect of a regimental commander who knew the storm was coming. They were told it would be 130, 150 mile an hour winds. Nobody was going to be able to stand there. So they prepared to defend and guard the tomb in echelon. And they prepared the fallback position, ultimately being on the top of the stairs so they could be, get out of the wind. But nobody refused those orders. And the rest of it is, and you guys would be proud of them, because it was classic sergeant taking care of his men. He stood down there with them throughout the storm until he was satisfied that the storm was passing. There was no further danger to his sentinels. And he departed and let the relief commander, the other sergeant, handle it. But they were all there on tune. Nobody, no tomb guard ever refused. Well, I can't say we refused an order. I had an incident where we respectfully declined, but it was respectful. And it was, yes. They didn't want us to, somebody got the idea that they didn't want us walking in the rain. And all the tomb guards came to me for some reason. I guess they wanted me to be the sacrificial lamb, to go to the sergeant's guard and say, we respectfully decline, the traditions have been established. We walk. Rain, snow, we don't want to stop. And he had to go back all the way to the Pentagon and say, tomb guards want to walk. And they let us through.
Richard, wait a minute. They couldn't fire you because you just can't go anywhere and find tomb guards. You're a special breed.
No, but they have ways of letting you know they're not happy with you. And we're Army. I mean, we're taking orders. And, I mean, that was a private nothing. And I'm talking to a sergeant of the guard who was, you know, a combat veteran twice over. And boy, he took me. I was a kid off the street, and he took me. Once he knew that I wanted to be a tomb guard, boy, he didn't relax a bit. He broke me and remade me into his image.
Listen,
they're tough people.
Tell us quickly about the Olympia and what the Marines refused in order, really, to do. Tell us about when the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier came
again,
over.
It comes down different ways, but, you know, I don't want to disparage those young Marines. For those of you who don't know the full, I won't get into the data. When the ship, the Olympia, was bringing the World War One unknown home, they collided into two hurricanes that, in fact, two of them collided, and then the ship collided into both of them. And the seas were so bad that there came a time, well, they had them on the deck initially. And the Marines were guarding. They wouldn't leave the body. The body was on the deck, and it was lashed down because in preparation for rough seas. But they wouldn't leave it. But they started hitting this, and they saw. I mean, the first time they knew they were in big serious troubles is the young Marine captain saw one of his men get washed down from the bow all the way to the stern of the ship. Yeah. He got washed down by a huge wave, hit him, and washed the kid right down the deck, and he grabbed the lifeline at the last minute, and it took his boots off. And he gave the order to come inside into the, and they respectfully, I'm going to say they respectfully refused, and they said lashes.
But wait a minute, hold on a minute, Richard. Wasn't part of the story was the captain of the ship asked the soldiers to go, all soldiers, to go down into the bottom of the boat because they thought they were going to lose the boat.
That's how bad it was. This is how bad it was. Is that they didn't see foam. It was green water. And they asked to be lashed to the railings of the ship so they could keep their eyes on the body. And they did it. And these kids are going underwater. That's what I'm saying. Young Marines. And then the captain of the ship, an old salt, he realized that they were going to lose the ship. They forget the body. They said, they were protecting the body, but he realized the ship was way past its design. And he asked the young priest, Father Duff, he was a Navy chaplain assigned to be with the body, and he ordered Duff to conduct a service. And they went down into the galley, those who weren't on duty, went down into the galley, and it was so bad, these guys, to walk. They had to walk on the wall. They couldn't walk on the floor. The ship was on its side. They'd go one from side to the other. And we have all this document. This isn't like, making this up, saying...
And that boat is docked right in Philadelphia, the Olympia, right?
Oh, yeah, no, Philadelphia has it, and it's by the Seaport Museum. And, but they thought they were going to lose the ship, and Father Duff, that's when I first, as I read the account, I first understood the role of the chaplain, how important the chaplain was. That young man, he attended to their spiritual needs, but he also called them to their duty. And he had a famous line that we used as the title of the investigative report that we created. We looked into this in detail. And he said, at the end, he said, with the hand of God, we will bring him home.
Didn't the captain of that ship say, if we lose the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier that was in a casket, buried right attached to the front of the bow of the ship, somebody throw me overboard?
Oh, that was the young Marine captain, yeah. I mean, he said, I knew I wasn't going to lose that. He said, if he went over the side, I was going right after him with him because I know I couldn't go home.
Yeah, listen, Jerry Tempesta.
Yes.
March 14th, 2026, what? 6 to 11, you're going to be at the Summerdale VFW. What are you going to be doing there?
Going to be singing Stick Corner Doo-Wop from the 50s and 60s, three sets. We're going to have Jerry Blavitz DJ playing the music from the 50s and 60s, line dancing. We're going to have a great time from 6 to 11 p.m. And if anybody wants a ticket, $35 per person, full buffet, beer and soda included. If anybody wants tickets, call Bill.
Call me. I'll get you in for free. I'll just give you a pass for the back door. I know the VFW commander.
It's a great fundraiser. Sure.
But listen, Jerry, I got to be honest with you. I'm sitting here with Ralph Galati, tough prisoner of war, Joe Daly, Bill Davenport, Marines in Vietnam. I never thought Italian guys in South Philly could fight. I thought all they could do is dance. Jerry, how many guys passed away from Newman in South Philly? Any idea?
You mean going to Vietnam?
In Vietnam.
I don't know Newman, but I know there's many people in the war with the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Philadelphia.
Yeah, yeah. And let me tell you something.
One Jimmy Boyle I grew up with, the other one John Witt I grew up went to school with.
Jerry carried a guy out. Jerry, describe real fast the battle of Renegade Woods that you were in. What happened?
Well, the Battle of Renegade Woods, they brought us in the Army News to rescue these Army Rangers. They didn't hear from them in a while. And they went there to do some recon of an area that they thought was an NBA buildup. And what happened was they got attacked when they got there. And they evidently called for help. And we were flown there, our company, the Wolfhound 2nd of the 27th. And they only had three helicopters, so my platoon got there first. Our platoon leader, Lieutenant Ronnie Clark, put us in two columns, at the point man and himself with the radio man and myself. And we held up a while, but then he got the okay to move in to do a sweep. And as soon as we moved in, we got ambushed by a fortified enemy position. Our point man, both columns were killed by platoon. Platoon leader was shot in the stomach. At the time, I was racing towards where the fire was coming from, firing my F-16 at it. And I saw him hunched over. I dragged him out of harm's way. Bullets flying past my way. Finally, I got shot in the head. I got spun around. I pulled out a hand grenade and threw it into the enemy position and took out the enemy machine gun.
Awesome.
And Jerry finally got the silver, the Bronze Star for Valor after 50 years, and we're trying to get that elevated. Yeah. Joe, I'm sure you've seen them kind of battles.
Oh, yeah. So much, Sheriff. Sure.
You know, Jerry, how old were you then?
I was 20.
How old were you when your first tour?
19.
Kind of, and Ralph, what were you, with 35?
I was an old guy. I was 23, yeah.
Joe, I got a great story. I came home from Vietnam, two tours. I was a weapons tune commander during my last tour. I set up machine guns and mortars in combat every night. When I come home, I couldn't vote and I couldn't drink a beer.
Couldn't vote. I said it all the time. And you did that for $80 a month.
Yeah. Joe's got about a minute left, but he wants you to make sure you announce some of your upcoming events at the museum.
Yes, yes. And this is a personal invitation for you, Jerry, Richard, and Joe Daly, who I've been emailing, to please, if you're
able to, maybe even carpool with Ralph. Wait a minute. I'm talking to Peggy the other day, and she said, Joe, they're going to do something with my dad's flag in Delaware County Veterans Memorial. I said, well, that must have been Ralph doing that. She said, well, Ralph suggested. She said, I got to think of the guy's name. I said, Joe Daly? She said, Joe Daly's the one that called me and this and that. And what a small world. What a small world.
It really is. Because my dad's from, he grew up in Drexel Hill. So, and then Darby, he was a Darby police officer. So it just feels right to try to get him there because I know he would
Peggy,
love that.
You got to get the dates. But
March 29th.
Wait a minute, Peggy. Your dad would be so proud of you, wouldn't she, Ralph?
Absolutely.
And Bill?
Yeah.
He loved that memorial more than than life.
This is the key. The mission continues.
Oh, I know it. I know he did just to the very last day, his very last breath. I know he was thinking of plans and ideas and things that he could do to try to make the museum better.
We're running out of time. Hurry up.
Hurry up.
Okay, so you got to come. It's Vietnam Veterans War Day on March 29th. It's the open house. We have live vocal performances. We have a awesome speaker and guest speakers. We also have a lot of veteran resources that are going to be there. Bagpipers. This is just going to be such a great day.
You know, we're all getting old.
Veteran.
You might want to have an ambulance or two. They're all getting old, you know. That might be for safety.
Awesome.
Joe, take the last minute or two, and thank you for coming down, you and your wife, and you find your roots down here in South Jersey and see all great town.
Yes.
And do you ever go over to Mike Seafood?
Oh, yeah.
Mike had that big run today, 5,000 people in the walk and run.
Really?
Probably raised $300,000 stays all in South Jersey for kids with autism and special needs and anger management. And that's great. You're one of my heroes, my friend.
Oh, thank you.
Ralph used to be, but I'm kind of old. Listen, this is how much respect people have for Ralph Gulati. I'm talking to Joe Daly, and Joe says, thank God Ralph's son and daughter that are doctors are moving back from California to Delaware County?
Might be Chester County.
Chester County. They're moving back. We're not going to lose Ralph to California. And Joe said, do you remember what you said to me on the phone?
I was just very thankful. I said, he knew he's going to keep him on. So.
No, he's not leaving. Well, we would have helped you. You could help one leg. The Delaware County Memorial could help one leg. And the Welcome Home Show would hold the other one.
I need adult supervision, thanks.
Listen, thank you guys. You guys are the untold stories that Bill and I get a chance every week to turn around and with Logan to talk about Delaware County Veterans Memorial, maybe one of the best in the country. Bill just built the Gold Star Family Memorial in North Wildwood. I don't know if you've seen that,
if you
get down that way.
Very nice. Yeah.
You know, memorials tell stories. Museums, Peggy's father's museum. That canteen is a story. That Lister bag is a story. That M60 is a story. Most of it's original equipment. They're really not museums, Joe. They're libraries.
Yes.
Because everybody, and we need to tell our stories for the generation to come. Hopefully, that they don't end up as teenagers where we were. Listen, want to say thank you for everybody listening, calling in, Ralph, Bill, Logan, Donna. Your wife didn't get a chance to talk, but, you know, God bless you. Married 55 years. Married right after you came home?
Yes.
How long?
2 years. She was still in high school.
Do you know something? We have to thank Donna for keeping him going back on the third tour.
Yes.
That's what it's all about. Listen, God bless everyone. Happy Valentine's Day.